Welcome to The Honest Report, a weekly podcast analyzing media coverage of the Arab Israeli conflict, anti-Semitism, and radical Islamic terrorism.
Violence escalating between Israel and the Palestinians, hundreds of rockets fired from Gaza toward Israel, people running for cover.
We start the show with the breaking news that has been coming in. Israeli police are saying that at least seven people have been injured in a car ramming and stabbing attack in Tel Aviv.
Hundreds of rockets fired from Gaza towards Israel. People running for cover on this Tel Aviv beach as air defense systems blew rockets out the sky.
Here's your host, Rob Walker.
The judicial overhaul being proposed by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has united countless Israelis in at least one way: their strong opinions on the matter. To its supporters, the legislation represents a critical need to stand in the way of an activist and unelected judiciary. But to its opponents, it's an unforgivable assault on democracy. But is there room for compromise between the two sides? And what is taking place behind the scenes that may be missed by the international news media? In this week's podcast, we are joined by one of Israel's most foremost public intellectuals and a senior fellow at the Shalom Hartman Institute in Jerusalem, Yossi Klein Halevi. He is a prominent opponent of the legislation, but has also sought to close the gap between Israelis to ensure that disagreement can remain civil and with Israel's best interests always in mind. Welcome to the Honest Report podcast. Yossi Klein Halevi, welcome to the Honest Report podcast.
Thank you, Robert. Really a pleasure to be with you.
The pleasure is all ours. You're obviously one of Israel's most prominent public intellectuals and thinkers, and you're a self-described centrist as well. Somebody who is on one hand supportive of Israel's right to exist, Israel's legitimacy as a Jewish state, but you're also a harsh critic, of course, of the current government. So you recently penned a piece where you called on Jews in the diaspora to register their voices of criticism and complaint when it comes to the current judicial overhaul. At the same time, I'm sure I don't need to tell you how divisive this issue has been between Israel and the diaspora, but it's also being used as a wedge issue by anti-Israel activists and detractors to try to create this divorce between Jews in Israel and Jews in the diaspora. How does one avoid that?
So I understand, obviously, the concerns of enemies of Israel hitching a ride on the anti-government demonstrations. I would say several things. First of all, this government is in itself an unexpected gift to BDS. I don't think that BDS could have dreamed this government up. When you have government ministers almost routinely speaking in favor of violence against Palestinians, saying openly racist expressions. Just yesterday, one of the government ministers said, you know, we're not an apartheid state. And of course we're not. But what was his reason for that? He said when a country puts people in prison, they don't have the same freedom of movement. They don't have the same rights as citizens who aren't in prison. So what he's saying is that Israel has created one big vast prison for Palestinians. Now, that, I don't have to tell you, Robert, as somebody who's devoted your life to defending Israel, that that's not how you defend Israel. And this is a government that every day you wake up and there's some new outrage. And so my strong sense is that what's really preserving the good name of the state of Israel are the hundreds of thousands of Israeli patriots who come out every Saturday night and wave giant Israeli flags and tell this government, you are violating the Zionist ethos. You don't speak in the name of Zionism. And there's something so powerful about this movement, the patriotism of this movement. Now, you know, I grew up in the U.S., and I came of age in the 1960s and 70s, period of great turmoil. And I remember anti-government demonstrators burning the American flag in the streets. We're waving the Israeli flag. We're singing Hatikva, the Israeli anthem, at the end of our demonstrations. We are expressing love for Zionism in Israel. That's what's happening on the streets every week. And so what I'm asking diaspora Jews to do is pay attention. This is not, you know, the demonstrations that are happening in Israel, they're not coming from the left. They're not, certainly not from the far left. They're coming from the heart of the Israeli mainstream, the center. It's being led by veterans of combat units, of the most serious of the commando units, pilots. And this is an outbreak of patriotism. This is a movement to try to save Israel from being hijacked by an extremist minority. And the far right in Israel is an extremist minority. It's an anomaly that they're sitting in the heart of power, because Netanyahu, in his desperation, confronting his legal issues, brought in parties that were always on the fringe of Israeli politics. And we are trying to save Israel from a government that actually is not representative. And every poll shows it. Israelis did not vote for a far-right government, and they didn't vote for a judicial policy to destroy the Supreme Court. People voted because they thought that this is the old Netanyahu, who's concerned about security, concerned about Iran, about the economy. And instead, what they got was a very different Netanyahu. They got a Netanyahu who only cares about one thing, extricating himself from his legal problems, and is willing to mortgage the country into the hands of the worst elements. This is not what Israelis voted for. This isn't what the country signed up.
You recently wrote an op-ed in the Times of Israel, and I want to quote from that for a moment. You wrote, quote, "This country is too small, too intimate, too embattled to turn our deep debates into irreconcilable schism, that the kind of fantasy circulating among some liberal Israelis of a, quote, two-state solution, the theocratic state of Judea and the liberal state of Israel. If we return home only to recreate the dysfunctional conditions that led to our ruin in the last time we were here, then Jewish history will be the story of failure." So, as you know, of course, Yossi, tensions in Israel and between the diaspora, certainly within Israel no less, are running extremely high over this issue. So how do you square this circle then, if you will, when you have two sides who see this issue as, if not existential, then close to it, but in extremely starkly different terms? And how does one keep their eye on the ball of committing to Israel's mission and to Israel as a whole, as opposed to letting these schisms blow themselves out of proportion?
Look, I've devoted my career, my professional life, to doing whatever I can to preserve the unity of the Jewish people. And my book that came out in 2013, called Like Dreamers, tells the story of Israel through left-wing and right-wing paratroopers who fought together in the Battle of Jerusalem. And what I was trying to show in that book is that for all of our differences, we're still part of the same story. And so that really has been my commitment as an Israeli since moving to Israel in 1982, 40 plus years ago. What's changed for me with this government is the realization that there are moments in the life of a people, in the life of a nation, when the threat is coming from within. And before we can reassert the need for national unity, we need to make sure that the forces that would destroy Israel from within are pushed back to the periphery. And what this government really is a meeting point between political zealots and the politically corrupt. And if you want to go back into Jewish history, go back 2,000 years to the destruction of the state of Judea, the Second Temple, the last time that we were sovereign in the land of Israel. And what destroyed Jewish sovereignty then was precisely this meeting point between political fanaticism and corruption. The zealots, the political zealots at that time, drove us into an unwinnable war against Rome. And at the same time, political corruption destroyed the kingdom of Judea. It destroyed the priesthood in the temple. And we were left spiritually and politically bereft. And that's my great fear about this government. And so before we try, which we will necessarily have to do, before we try to reassert national cohesion and solidarity, we need to confine the poison that is seeping into and seeping out of this government. We need to confine that poison back to the periphery. And then we can begin the painful process of rebuilding national unity, but not before we save Israeli democracy, we save the Supreme Court from a government that has no respect for democratic norms. We ensure that Israeli democracy doesn't only mean democracy for Jews, which is what this government really stands for. And we make sure that the vision of the founding fathers and mothers of the state of Israel is preserved, and that we can then go back to the necessary business of reestablishing the unity of the mainstream. You can't have unity with the far right. You can't have unity with those forces that are against the most foundational definition of Israel as a Jewish and democratic state.
So if you were to take out your crystal ball, where do you see this issue resolving, or what do you see happening in future?
I think that the democratic movement is going to prevail. I believe that the demonstrations, to some extent, have already changed the trajectory of this government. You know, if not for the demonstrations, we would have had in place by now a judicial revolution that would have made this country unrecognizable. The government intended to impose an override clause, which would have destroyed the Supreme Court. It would have meant that the Knesset, with a simple majority, could override any Supreme Court decision. It would have emptied Israeli democracy of any significance. And so, to some extent, I believe we've already won, but this government is by no means over, and it fully intends to implement an anti-democratic policy, and God forbid to turn Israel into a Jewish Hungary. You know, Hungary, Orban's Hungary, is the model for this government. And we're not going to allow that to happen. And I do believe we're going to win. And, you know, I think we're going to win for a very simple reason. None of the government supporters, there's no one in Israel, including those who are the most passionate supporters of the government's judicial revolution, no one who believes that if this government doesn't succeed in controlling, let's say, the committee to appoint judges, that the state of Israel won't survive. But in my camp, the camp that's out in the streets protesting every week, we believe deeply that if this government prevails, if this government succeeds in turning the Supreme Court into an empty shell, destroying Israeli democracy, then Israel will not survive in the long term. Israel, startup nation, modern, successful Israel is going to begin to unravel. We're going to see a mass flight of high-tech companies, serious decline in the Israeli economy. We're going to see massive immigration of young people, the first mass immigration on the basis of ideology. And we've never had an ideological immigration before. So for all these reasons and more, what we're struggling for, and we believe this deeply, is the long-term survival of Israel. And so when you have two camps facing each other, one camp, and I'm sure the government camp, believes that their judicial plan will be good for Israel. It will make Israel, it will strengthen the right. It will allow the right wing to have free hand. I'm sure they believe that that's really for the best. But I don't believe that they really think that that's a matter of Israel's survival. And so if you have one camp that's fighting for survival and the other camp that's fighting basically for power, the camp that's fighting for survival is going to win because we're more desperate. I'm ready to do anything that's legal or within the realm of reasonable protest, like civil disobedience, to ensure that this government fails in its attempts to fundamentally redefine the state of Israel.
Yossi, of course, you live in Jerusalem. Although Tel Aviv has certainly been the epicenter of these anti-government, anti-judicial overhaul protests, tell us a little bit from your perspective in Israel's capital with respect to the international media, the mecca of international media, certainly in the region. How is this issue being reported around the world, and what's being done well, what's being not done well as far as reporting is concerned?
Well, I saw a few of the interviews, I saw a few of the interviews that were done with Netanyahu in the U.S. media, and I found them frankly appalling, but not for the reason that you might think. I was surprised at how Netanyahu was given basically softball questions, and the journalists who were interviewing him simply didn't do their homework, and they allowed Netanyahu to run rings around them. Any Israeli journalist would have known how to respond to Netanyahu's bald-faced lies and half-truths. When he said, for example, he said, you know, in America, the president, politicians appoint the Supreme Court justices. So in Israel, the Supreme Court justices appoint themselves. And so what we're trying to do is just simply align Israeli democracy with America's democracy and to make Israel more democratic. And any Israeli journalist would have known to say, first of all, the judges don't appoint the judges. There's a committee that's composed of government representatives, of representatives of the Bar Association, and of the Supreme Court. Secondly, in the U.S., there's an extensive system of checks and balances. In Israel, we have no system of checks and balances except the Supreme Court. And so if the government is going to control the appointment of Supreme Court justices, what that means is that given the fact that we have only one House of Parliament, the Prime Minister will control all three branches of government. Now, any Israeli journalist would have known to say that to Netanyahu. And Netanyahu wouldn't have dared to make that comment to an Israeli journalist. But he did feel he could get away with it with foreign journalists because they're ignorant, because they're lazy, because they don't do their homework. And so sometimes that's played against Netanyahu, and sometimes it's played in favor. And I was appalled at how Netanyahu was able to get away with just simply lying.
Well, Yossi, again, thank you so much for your time and your perspective on this. Certainly, arguably, the biggest issue of the day in Israel today. Thank you again.
Thanks for having me, Robert, and pleasure to engage with you.
And that's today's edition of the Honest Report podcast. If you haven't done so yet, please subscribe to our mailing list, our podcast channel, and follow us on social media for the most up-to-date news. If you like what you've heard, please consider a donation to support our continued efforts at www.honestreporting.ca/donate. Until next time, thank you so much for listening.